You're listening to C101.5 FM, The Ha, from Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario.
You're listening to a show called Dangerfield on 101.5 The Hawk FM. I'm Mary, and tonight my guest is Mark Friedman. Mark is an American bassist, multi-instrumentalist, composer, and producer. He's toured internationally and is widely known for playing in a band called The Slip. Mark has a Massachusetts-based music studio called Freedom Trail, and he's played in several other bands as well over the years, most recently completing a tour with Ryan Mott Blue. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Mary. This is quite an honor to to grace the airwaves with you. It's kind of a dream come true.
It's so exciting. I realized today that we've known each other for almost 20 years. Can you believe that?
Wow.
I know. I went back and I looked at the first time I saw your band when we met. And it was 18 years ago. So that was with your band called The Slip. So why don't we start off the show with a song that your band just put out on Monday. It's a song called Super Terrain Onlyness. And then we'll come back and we'll chat, okay?
Sounds great.
Sank the tea. You don't
That was Super Terrain Onlyness by a band called The Slip. And tonight, Mark Friedman joins me on Dangerfield on 101.5 FM The Hawk. So, Mark, you are actually about to go on tour with the band The Slip. You've got, I believe it's about like eight shows coming up over the next week and a bit. You're playing everywhere from Vermont to Rhode Island, Boston, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and then you're ending the run at Levon Helm Studios. So that song that we just heard you put out on Monday, and it's the first time your band's released a song in about 15 years. Is that correct?
I think it is correct. Yeah. I was thinking about that today because I'm pretty sure the last thing we officially released as The Slip was the full length Eisenhower in 2006. Besides there is some other stuff with Surprise Me, Mr. Davis, the project we have with Nathan Moore, which includes all three of us. That was the kind of the stuff that we were working on post Eisenhower for a couple years, you know? But yeah. I think as under the Slip name, this is absolutely the first piece of unique music that's new.
And that was recorded by, I believe, Steve Albini. And he's known for, working with such incredible bands as Nirvana and the Pixies. So take us through kind of like how that song was recorded and what that experience was like.
Well, yeah, I mean, it all came down the pipe really quickly. Where we just kind of put our minds to it and practiced for a couple days beforehand up in Montreal, and then entered the studio with Steve, who we just kind of met, that day. And it was, it was organized kind of, it was not organized last minute, but it was just kind of a thing that was a fun project for everyone to be involved with. It wasn't a specific ask of us to record or Steve. It was kind of a project that was put together from a third party. So that kind of made it even cooler. There was actually even kind of less pressure to nail, a recording or get any kind of specific EP or album done. We just went in with a couple brand new ideas, something that Brad had just penned probably within the last year or so. And that's, Super Terrain Onlyness and a couple other tracks. And it was a very organic and clean recording environment. Steve just let us do our thing and we let him do his thing. And we just kind of enjoyed each other's company. and out came this very cool, snapshot of our music. And it was recorded. I love the way it was recorded. That's my original bass track from 4 years ago. And I love the tone that Steve got, in the studio that day.
Was that recorded on tape?
Yeah. Yes, I believe it was. He has a very direct kind of way of recording where there aren't too many pieces of equipment or gear in between the artist and the tape machine. So it's a pretty pure snapshot of music usually, or the band in there. And I think that worked really well with The Slip because we have as a trio, we've just have so many years of, marinating together in our sound that it worked really well to just be recorded so purely.
And you're a producer yourself. And so are you someone who kind of, maybe researches the techniques of other producers, or do you just kind of come into it naturally? Can you take us through a little bit of what your process is like when you produce music?
I don't really have a set way I do it because usually I'm producing myself, so I'm usually blocking out my producer time. mainly for me, and it's not by choice. We definitely have the room to schedule other artists in here, but it just happens to be that I focus on my original music. But yeah, when I work with artists, it happens to be usually a remote working these days, I have to say. And so, and usually it's a post kind of situation, like mixing or mastering. So, I'd say if it was more recording stuff, there would be a lot more techniques that are producer techniques going in that I would be able to speak of. But I use a pretty analog outboard kind of setup, where a lot, if I mix something or I master something, a lot of this stuff, if it's going to be a delay, it usually goes to a delay machine that I've had for 20 years or, one that just got fixed, one that's breaking, which happened on Justin Major's record.
I wanted to talk about that a little bit. So Justin Major, he's a Philadelphia based artist, and you produced and mixed his album during COVID, correct?
Yeah. I mixed it about a year ago.
And on that note, why don't we play a song off that album? Let's play a song. So the album is called Discourse, and the song is called No Man Is an Island.
Oh, cool.
And we'll listen to that, and then we'll come back and we'll chat, okay?
Great.
Justin Mazur. The song was called No Man Is an Island off the album Discourse. And Mark Freeman joins me tonight. Mark Freeman produced and mixed that album during COVID. And Mark's can be found on Instagram. You can find him at Instagram.com/Mark_Freedman. And that's MARC_FRDMN. Mark is also has a studio called Freedom Trails Studio. And you can find that on YouTube, YouTube.com/Freedom Trails Studio. And so, Mark, what was that kind of process like, kind of the remote? Like, how did you work remotely with Justin? Was it, did he send you track by track, or was it like a full album, or can you talk us through that?
I think, well, we, on the entirety, we worked on two different records. Okay. So I believe we worked on each one album at a time. And I think he would usually send me all of the album at once, and then I would download them from a shared server type situation or cloud, you know, operation, and just have at it, and like just kind of like look at what he had, you know, and it comes up in my computer just like his, basically, and then I just start, you know, mixing it. So that's really the glamorous path of a remote album, that, you know, that's basically it. And then I would start working on, you know, what I would do to mix an album, which is I would probably start with the drums and, you know, finesse those, and then the bass, you know, whatnot. And then to produce it, you know, I would just start doing whatever I heard first, you know, and that usually just went, you know, pretty organically. You know, I'd add a snare here or maybe some synth swells, you know, edit some audio that he had or whatnot. It was really fun. It was really fun. I've known Justin for like 4, 5, 6 years, and we've played in a couple different projects together. And it was really cool to hear his, you know, his personal instrumental, compositions, and just to kind of see where they could go was really a fun project over the last winter.
And do you ever take like songs that you've heard and kind of, you know, like it could be any song, any kind of modern song out there or song from the past and remix it ever? Have you ever done that?
not really. No, I think, you know, it's funny. For a moment I lived in New York 3 to 4 years or so. And the only time I remember doing that was when I was experimenting with some new audio programs and I had just moved to New York. And I think I cut up like a Mills Brothers song, which is like a 4-part a cappella tune, and maybe a Keith Richards intro so I could get the drums, you know, from the Stones' new drummer there, you know. And maybe so like a drum loop off Keith Richards' solo record and some a cappella old, you know, jazz music, but nothing serious, obviously. No.
How do you archive all your songs that you create and make and all of that? Do you have like, are you like a super organized system or how do you, what's the process like for that?
I think it's semi-organized. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that difficult to keep everything on a couple hard drives and then, you know, maybe back them up to a larger couple terabyte hard drive, because a lot of my stuff obviously lives in the digital domain, working mainly in Pro Tools, and I have some tape machines and stuff, but you know, so in that setting obviously I'd have stuff on cassettes, but yeah, I have some stuff, you know spread out over some old computers and stuff, but mainly it's kind of hopefully all in one place, sort of. I guess that's my answer. I could definitely hook up a bunch of hard drives and start flying around, but yeah.
And do you ever kind of go back to, have you kind of ever gone back to a song that you maybe made in the past and revisited it, you know, 10 years later or anything like that? Or are you kind of somewhere?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm still working on songs that I, I wrote, you know, started writing 15 years ago for sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's pretty natural. I mean, I think even going back to the composers back, you know, a couple centuries ago, I'm sure they had pieces of music. They're always, you know, maybe adding or taking away and sharing parts from different pieces. So it's very natural to have stuff that's always in your, you know, in your queue. If you write original music, you know, and there's nothing wrong with something you wrote 20 years ago or 10 years ago, unless, you know, the lyrics are completely outdated or, you know, right. Something.
And so for those just joining, you're listening to Dangerfield, and my guest tonight is Mark Friedman, American bass, I call him the bass laser. So Mark, you've got a studio called Freedom Trail. And you've got this really cool thing that you do. So for people that want to check out some music, you can go to youtube.com/Freedom Trail Studio. And so, Mark, you've got, can you talk us through, there's something called like a YouTube audio library that you contribute to. And it's linked to Creator Studio. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about what that is and what that's all about?
Yeah. Basically, I was approached by some people at YouTube and Google a couple years ago, and they basically wanted original instrumental music that I could then license over to them or sell to them that they would be able to offer to YouTube users. So then the people who are making videos and adding content to YouTube can take this music that's put into an audio library and they can use that for their videos, you know, whether because if you're making a video on YouTube, you might run into the problems where you can't use a Who song or a Black Crow song or a Mariah Carey. You're going to get a flag and, you know,
and
a
so
potential
will
be blocked, you know.
Does that give you a notification when somebody uses your song? Like, are you able to kind of go and see them created from your music?
No, that would be kind of cool. But no, I mean, it's definitely a kind of a relationship where I think the music suppliers tend to supply the music and then let, you know, let it go where it goes. It goes into a lot of different places quickly. So it's kind of, I could see how it's kind of a little bit difficult to, you know, to track down right away. But every half a year or so, I'll check out and go into and see what, you know, some people are doing with the Freedom Trail stuff. And mm-hmm. it's always really, really entertaining and fun. Sometimes awesome. a little bit disturbing, but luckily not too disturbing, which is great. In this day and age, we'll take that.
Yeah. Well, maybe can we listen to one of your instrumentals? Maybe we could listen to a song called Mr. Lady. Would that be okay?
Oh yeah, that's a funky one. Sure.
Cool. I like that. So let's listen to Mr. Lady by Mark Friedman from his Freedom Trail studio, and we'll come back and we'll chat.
Thank you.
Mark Freeman, who joins me tonight on Danger Field. So Mark, you've been quite busy lately. So we mentioned at the start of the show that you're about to embark on, you know, almost 2 weeks with the Slip, your mm-hmm. band from, you know, from since high school, pretty much.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you recently came off tour with a gentleman called Ryan Montbleu.
Yep.
I'm saying the French pronunciation of it.
No, I like it. I like it. We happen to say blue. We do say blue down in here in the States, but there's nothing. There might not be anything correct about that. Just because we do it.
So are you actually going? So that was kind of like the Upper East Coast. Are you going back to any of the venues that you played on that tour, on your Slip tour?
No, I think there's some crossover with Higher Ground in Vermont, which is where the Slip starts in 2 days, you know, on Thursday. Mm-hmm. I think Ryan and I happen to be rolling through there at the end of the year on December 29th or 30th, maybe December 30th. So I think that might be the only club that's like a crossover or of both tours, you know.
Right.
Where I'll be able to leave a clean pair of socks somewhere, stash it, and you know, just in case I need it on December 30th.
Happy New Year to you.
Yes.
And so he's pretty cool. So he's got four albums that he's been putting out this year. So there's like Wood, Fire, Air, and what am I missing?
Water, I think.
Water.
Yep.
And so I think, Neil, did you record that with Adam Landry? Were you on those sessions?
Yeah.
Cool. He's recorded such great artists as Deer Tick and Raylan Baxter. He's great. Why don't we play a song off? I think I want to hear. Let's listen to I Don't Want to Go off Ryan Montbleu. And then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about playing with him.
It is the summer of 2010. I'm walking round the island. The sun is glowing red and fading slow. And I am all alone with my old friend psilocybin. And that sun is blazing a brighter end than I've ever seen before. The woman that I love is working at the station. And in 2 days from now, I'll leave again. And it stops me in my tracks to feel a strange sensation that I've not felt since I don't remember when. I don't wanna go. It was the late summer 1999, and I just dropped off a friend of mine in the old car that I have but do not own. And there's a song called Drifting by Jimi Hendrix on my radio. And the tears have never rained down quite as much as this before. And my job at the mall pays me just fine. My room at the house is small, but it's mine. And in 2 weeks from now, we'll all go off to college. Why now when everything is fine? I don't wanna go. I don't wanna go. And go away and leave you here. The days turn into weeks and years. So soon, too soon before we know. I don't wanna go. Christmas time of 84, I'm watching the old video with me, my brother, and my mother laughing on the couch. And my father leaves the camera, get into the frame with us. And my mother's holding all of us the way she always does. Someday there'll be a last time together. When it is, I do not get to know. I don't want to go. So soon, too soon before we know. I don't wanna go. I don't wanna go. I don't wanna go. I don't wanna go. It's the dawn of 2020. Still working on my vision. I'm still wishing for a love to call my own. And I'm healthy and I savor the fruits of all my labor. Life is good these days, although I'm still alone. And the woman that I love is waiting for me somewhere. And I have faith she's somewhere close to me now. I'm a sucker for a pretty face, and more so for temptation. And I'll miss the party, but I should head on home for now. I don't wanna go. I don't wanna go. I don't want you to go away, leave you here. The days turn into weeks and years so soon. Too soon before we know. I don't wanna go. I don't wanna go.
Ryan Mint Blue, and the song was called I Don't Want to Go. And Mark Freeman, who played bass on all of Ryan's recent four EPs that are being released this year. So the song that we just heard, which of the albums was that off of? The song I Don't Want to Go.
I believe it's off Water, but I'm a little spacey these days. So I might want to double. I'd have to like look at my computer while we're on air here. Yeah, but I think it's from Water.
And so was the set list that you guys played on this recent tour, was it from all four of those EPs?
Yeah. I'm not sure if we're touching upon every tune. Like I think there's definitely one that's one EP is still forthcoming. Mm-hmm. So one is not out yet. I apologize for not knowing exactly. And Water is the one that just came out. Okay. And yeah, we were featuring tunes like I Don't Want to Go and Tonight's Captain and Playing Till the End of Our Days last week. It was really fun too to play these tunes that we tracked with Adam, who was really great in the studio. And bringing them to the live setting in the last couple of weeks has been really, really fun.
You lived for a little while in San Francisco on the West.
Sure.
And there was you joined for a bit the band called Big Light, and there was an artist called Fred Torfey who you made some great music with. Why don't we play a song called Silver Eyes? And we'll come back and we'll chat, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
changes like the water. Tide comes in and brings a party.
Fred Torfey, a new song. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's an unreleased track by Fred and I.
Cool.
Yeah, I wrote the music and he does the lyrics, vocal stuff.
I love that song.
So it's kind of like the old classic songwriters, Hammer, Rogers and Hart or whatnot, one guy kind of did the piano and the other guy was, with the pencil and the lyrics, that was pretty much how we rolled, when we were doing our demos in San Francisco. And that's what Silver Eyes is,
I love that song.
Yeah. It's unreleased. Who knows what we'll do with it, but I thought it might be just a fun thing to play, once over the airwaves.
Yeah. So speaking of old-fashioned ways of making music and then even new-fashioned ways, you had an experience where one of your songs back in the day was actually featured on a game called Guitar Hero. And the song was called Even Rats by The Slip. And did that kind of bring your music globally? Did you find people from across the world that kind of heard your music that may not have had a chance to hear it before? What was that experience like?
There was definitely people from all over, the world, and mm-hmm.
And did you play it? How did you do when you played it?
that was fun. That was a fun time in the band's existence. I remember when a friend of ours who was involved with Harmonix, who made the game, he came over to my house with the game and the console and the controllers, and it was almost like Spinal Tap. We're all just psyched about the new, the new game and the new console. And Brad and I would go at it with Even Rats, two player. And it was, I was really fun. I have to say, I'm still a fan of kind of the way that whole Guitar Hero setup works. Cause it can be pretty dialed in and intricate to the music. And it's a game of not a game of chance. It's a game of skill that you can learn. So I actually worked for them for a little while after that. And, in the years that followed, down the road, I did some MIDI authoring for them, which was involved with the notes that come at you when you play Guitar Hero.
What does that mean, Mark? MIDI authoring, what does that mean?
It means I would listen to the music and devise what those red and blue and yellow, buttons that come flying at you.
That's a pretty cool job.
I would come up with those patterns, you know, which fit the music rhythmically and sort of harmonically as far as direction. And so it was kind of like arranging for a five, you know, a five tonal drum. It was pretty cool. And it was a good experience, like learning how to, you know, sync up the audio with a MIDI tempo like that, and then devise a little map, you know, for those buttons to come down. Yeah, it all sounds very futuristic at this point, but I'm pretty sure it happened.
What was the first instrument that you played?
On Guitar Hero?
Or just no. The first instrument when you were a kid? What was the first instrument
back
you learned?
Back in the day. I mean, I started on piano, actually. That was kind of the thing to do in my household. My brother did it. And then I did it when, you know, starting at around age 7. And then at age 11, I finally convinced the higher ups that I could maybe, you know, take a stab at guitar, 6-string guitar. And that was kind of it. You know, at 11, I was playing guitar. And then I think a couple years later, I got a $50 bass just for 4-track reasons, you know, for recording covers of tunes or original tunes on our little Tascam 4-track. And then, yeah, so just that, it just kind of morphed from keyboards into guitar and bass with a drum set involved too in the background. And that's kind of like, that's my wheelhouse, is just the bass guitar synthesizer kind of area.
Cool.
I guess. Yeah.
And so, right. Mark, so for those that are just joining or listening to Dangerfield, and my guest tonight is Mark Friedman. So, Mark, you've played some pretty cool venues. So, for example, I think when Eisenhower came out with your band The Slip, Jim James of Mind Morning Jacket actually talked about your band in the New York Times and raved about you and ended up bringing your band on tour. What's kind of one of the most kind of memorable things that maybe through touring that have you gotten to meet any of your idols while you've been on tour?
I'd like to say there's, if I had a nickel for every story, you know, I'd be Rockefeller, but you know, it is probably, you know, there's definitely some pretty, you know, whether it was meeting, you know, idyllic figures or not, or, or just finding, you know, experiences that you realize could never happen except for this unique experience with this band at this time. There was a lot of that, you know, for sure. And it was definitely, you know, traveling to Japan for the first time in 99 or 2000. I met Herbie Hancock once, you know, I can say that after a gig. That's pretty much, that's the story you want to tell your grandkids. Oh yeah. You know, like, oh yeah, I met Herbie Hancock.
Yeah, cool.
You know, because he is, you know, his name is synonymous with jazz and all that. So it was very cool to have a little, you know, a one-on-one with him after a show once where he saw the act, you know, the music I performed, and he was really supportive and positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so here's a question. So if you... I've read that you've taught, you know, a little bit here and there music. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite? What song do you teach? Like, if you're teaching someone how to play bass, what song do you pick to do that?
That's a good question. You know, the skill level of bass players that I teach in the last couple of years or 5 years, I was kind of focusing on beginner high school level players, and that was really awesome and fun. I kind of like being in that area because it's a challenging space, you know. And because the primary things are, you know, just balance and technique, you know. It's like getting the choreography of your fingers oriented with the bass. It's very it's very ballet, if I'm not sounding too classical right now. But I mean, it's a nice exchange and communication you can have with these kids. And A lot of it was technique and stuff like that. So I would, a lot of times I would follow their lead as far as what music they were interested in and stuff. You could probably tell from what I'm saying that it really depends on the student and what skill level we're at and all that. I think back in the old days, I was more, improv based teacher working on improvisational stuff, more of an advanced skill. But nothing really jumps to mind. In general, though, I would, there's bass players like Paul Jackson and James Jamerson that I would always recommend my students to check out if they're in that crossover between pop and jazz kind of world or the Motown era in particular, and even the Blues Brothers and stuff like that, classic blues. I usually stress chronology. Maybe better to go from the earlier stuff than backwards. And in this day and age, it's not a foreign concept, but it kind of is. I mean, we're definitely in the age of now, and what's the newest thing, not what's the oldest thing per se. But gosh darn, I really wouldn't mind if some of the algorithms supported that concept for a little while. Hey, what's the oldest thing what's the oldest thing out there these days, not the newest thing? I do that. That's a little bit of a tangent, but I do that with music too. So I'll start people on Dixieland and blues and early swing or early rock and roll, early country. That's the kind of stuff I'm always devouring myself, to be honest.
Do you have a favorite cover song to play on bass specifically?
It's hard to say. I played a lot of different gigs and, often weekly I would do a kind of a dub reggae gig in Boston, and I definitely enjoy playing reggae covers all day, all night.
Really?
And that really has become a passion of mine in the last decade or so, last 5 years is working on roots music and stuff like that. And there's a lot of those classic reggae classic reggae songs that I love to play, whether it's Cherry O' Baby or, Other Side of the Mountain, stuff by Dennis Brown. And I love the classic reggae stuff and the Family Man bass lines around Marley. Bob Marley is great music too, obviously. But yeah, I'm an omnivore. I like all sorts of music. I like playing a classic Madonna song or a classic Cyndi Lauper song, along with a Built to Spill song, or a Modest Mouse, all sorts of stuff, really.
Awesome. Well, for those who are just joining or who've been listening, if you want to find Mark online, you can find him at instagram.com/Mark, M-A-R-C underscore Friedman, which is F-R-D-M-N. You can also find his band at instagram.com/TheSlip_band. And you can find him on YouTube at youtube.com/FreedomTrailStudio. So, Mark, we're coming up on time here. Is there any song that you want to play to close out the show?
Oh, well, I don't know. Let me look under the song Christmas Tree. I think there's one back there. It's still unopened. Yeah.
Okay, let's listen to it. What's it called?
Yeah, let's unwrap that one. It's it's just an original tune that I do the vocals on, and I wrote it a couple years ago about a hard time I was having. And it's nice to know that humans can bounce back, and we can defy gravity if we need to.
Cool.
What's it called? It's called D Ocean Gate, because in the key of D, and I wrote it while I was living on the ocean. So.
Awesome. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was so great to catch up with you, and I look forward to seeing you someday soon.
And thank you, Mary.
Yeah, this is really fun, and I look forward to sharing the songs. Let's close the show with Mark Friedman and his new song, D Ocean Gate. Okay, take care, Mark.
Thank you, Mary. You too.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. surprises. We're drifting along, suffered in caution, a nightmare anymore. Vacant in love, sun pushed past, like the inferno open. Look inside, yeah. Keep your eye on the door, original trains, Fukushima wings. A driftwood of souls made it here. A mixing tide pulls acid rain. Microplastics found inside of your pain. Don't sit tonight on the dew steps. The spirits chatter more than the ocean gate. Stay.